Welcome to the Let's Get Real podcast with Justin and Trisha Davis.
Honest conversations about life, love, and leadership.
Welcome to season four.
Welcome to the Let's Get Real podcast. So excited for this episode of the podcast as we're going to be joined in just a few minutes by our good friend Aaron Brockett. And Aaron is the lead pastor of Traders Point Christian Church. He's also a good friend. He's a mentor. Really, our ministry would not exist without Aaron Brockett and Traders Point Christian Church. We're going to share that story on the podcast in just a few minutes. But this month on the podcast, we're talking about burnout and how so many of us are so busy that we're exhausted beyond the point of that a nap can fix. And so how do we get back and recover our life and walk with Jesus in a way that brings us life and sustainability? And Trish and I had a pretty honest conversation about burnout in our life and our marriage on the previous episode. And Aaron's going to talk about that from a leadership standpoint, from a pastoral standpoint. He's going to share with us some things that he does personally to avoid burnout in his life and in his ministry and his marriage. It's a great conversation. Maybe you're feeling burnout right now in your marriage relationship. We want to invite you to join us for a weekend in Nashville, Tennessee, May 3rd through the 5th. It's called the Refinest Weekend, and it's a weekend set aside to recover and restore and reconnect your heart to God's heart and to the heart of your marriage. And so you can find more information by going to our website, refineus.org/weekend, and it's going to be an incredible time for you to get away, for you to reconnect with God, reconnect with your spouse. And so make sure you check out refineus.org/weekend, and we'd love to have you join us in Nashville, May 3rd through the 5th. Well, without any further delay, welcome to this episode with Aaron Brockett.
Well, for our listeners that may be new to you, we'd love to hear a little bit more about you besides just your name and where you work. So share a little bit about, you know, fam, hobbies, I don't know, whatever you want to throw out there. It's fair game.
Yeah, for sure. Lindsay and I have been married 25 years next summer. So trying to figure out how to celebrate that this next year. So very excited about that. We've got four kids, a boy and three girls, Connor, Campbell, Kennedy, and Cadence. And they're 21, 19, 16, and 11. And I've been at Traders Point for 16 years last month. And
that's crazy.
Lindsay and I are, man, we love anything food related. So we're always looking for that newest restaurant. Love snow skiing. So that's me.
That's awesome.
Well, one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on the Let's Get Real podcast is, you know, obviously we go back quite a ways. I think I met you 2008, right around this time, 2008. But really, you know, I've said this in number of different places except in this format, but I don't know that Refinest Ministries would exist if it weren't for you. And so I mean I don't want you to take all the credit, but I mean God used you in
It kind of went like this. Justin met you for lunch or coffee, I don't know. He came back and he's like, I met this really cool dude. He's taken over Traders, and I think the building that you're in now was like just the you know, paint was fresh. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's awesome. And then you guys got together again. And I don't know if Aaron asked us or if you told me he asked if we would share our story at Traders. And I was like, oh, no. Nope. And there was some talk of like, well, why don't you pray about it? Take some time. And I'm like, I've been in ministry sometime. Like, I know that pastor card, but we ended up saying yes. And I mean, you'd probably been at the church for maybe a year, probably.
Yeah, right out of a year. Yeah.
I'm like, we're going to get this dude fired. We're going to share our story and people are just going to get up and leave. But we did. And it was like, we call it like our Book of Acts moment of the way that the church responded. And it was the first time in my for me personally, in our story of our marriage falling apart, to see the redemption side of it and this gift that we have to share what God did through our marriage. So it really was, it did. It started with your ask and then a belief in seeing our story as a possibility of good. So, you know, thanks so much for just one invitation can change a whole lot of lives.
Yeah. Well, I'm really grateful you guys chose to do it. And you're right. Our church really responded well to it. And it was because you guys were willing to be vulnerable. And I think even if nobody had walked through the exact circumstances of what you guys had walked through, I think everybody could really relate and appreciated the fact that you were so willing to be vulnerable with everything. So yeah, I can remember all that. The lunch that Justin and I had was at Max and Herman's. It doesn't exist anymore.
It's true.
And actually, Justin, we go back even further because I was a Bible college, actually I was a high school student visiting Bible college campus, and you were like the upperclassman, and that's the first time we ever met. But I was just a nobody. And so I remember you from that. So when you reached out to me when I first moved to India, I was like, I remember that guy. He was like a basketball guy from Lincoln. And I'm just like this. And so we go to lunch and I'm just thinking, we're just going to catch up. I knew nothing about your story. And I was like, so, you know, how's it going? And we ordered nachos or whatever. And you just like spill your guts to me.
I just basically cried all the way through that lunch.
I was like, it was like an open fire hydrant, like, holy cow. And I was like, so appreciative of just how honest you were with me. And Trisha, I can remember the first time meeting you, because it was a very icy stare. Like you were just like, I know what you're doing. I know, you know, what you're asking and the answer is no. But I can still remember back on that day and how God used it. So it's really cool to see how he's used your story and to see how your ministry has expanded to help so many people.
Well, and, you know, I'm excited to have you on because when we talk about you, it's in the context of our story, but you know, you have your own story. Those who have hung out on the Let's Get Real podcast know about us closing a church, you know, after COVID and just the pain and heartbreak of that. And people look you up now, you lead a mega church that you have, you know, have really grown up with, you know, in leadership. But tell us a little bit about your ministry journey before you got to Traders.
Yeah. Well, you know, graduated from Bible college in 98, couldn't find a job in ministry for, close to a year or so, or maybe a year and a half. Some of that was, there was a girl involved and I was kind of waiting for her to finish school. So I wasn't about to leave her. And so we had to wait till she was ready to move as well. But, basically sent out resumes to a bunch of country churches all over the Midwest. And the first church that responded, I went, and, I think I was 24 years old and Lindsay was 20, and they called me senior pastor, which I think is hilarious. The senior pastor. And it was a church of about 180 people in a town of 900 in Southern Illinois, and all the interesting challenges of that. And then really was interested in planting a church. And so we ended up getting an opportunity to do that in Northern California, just outside of Sacramento, in a university town, university setting. Hardest thing I've ever done in my life. So planted a church at 25 years old, meeting in a movie theater, a very resistant community to the gospel, very difficult, kind of like it wasn't in Berkeley, but it was very similar to like the Berkeley environment. Mm-hmm. And, started the church, by God's grace, that church still exists today. Despite all my mess ups, I think all the policies that church organizations like Stadia put together have come out of my mistakes. And Lindsay and I had our first two kids out there, and our marriage was really struggling way more than I think either one of us really realized. We were just in survival mode, you know, having little kids, trying to start a church in over our heads. And I got to the point just before my 30th birthday where I was like, if I don't tag out and go over to the bench and sit down for a season, I might do something really stupid. And that was like a really jarring, you know, moment for me. And so I started sending out resumes to churches once again, just to try to get back to the Midwest, get a little bit closer to family. Lindsay didn't want to raise kids on the West Coast. and could not find a job. Like, you know, churches were, I got a stack of rejection letters like this high. My home church in Southwest Missouri, they were talking to me about possibly bringing me back on. Nothing ever materialized. And I got to the place where I was like, you know what? I think that maybe part of this journey might mean stepping out of ministry for a season. I feel called to ministry, but there's nothing happening. God's continuing to close doors. And I can't give my full effort to this church plant because of this. And so I remember literally calling Lindsay's uncle who sold RVs in Carthage, Missouri. And I was like, hey, could we move back, get an apartment, and I'll sell RVs for a while. And then just regroup, you know, and get back in. Mm-hmm. And it was at that moment, I think God was kind of bringing me to that moment where I was like facing that as a potential option, that there was a church in Louisville, Kentucky that called me. They were asking if I would serve their outreach department, to lead their outreach department and preach once a month. And it was a church of about 1,200, the biggest church I would ever be on staff of at that moment, because most of my churches I'd been a part of were about 200 or less. And so we moved to Louisville in 2006, and I led the outreach department and preached once a month and loved it until I didn't. I loved it because I remember Lindsay told me, she goes, I feel like I got my husband back. It allowed me to be fully engaged with my kids. It helped me to establish some healthy patterns in my physical life that I knew I'd been neglecting spiritually, emotionally, all that. But then I just realized, man, I'm really called to serve as a lead pastor. And so I was really wrestling. I was like, man, you know, my personal life, my marriage, my kids is healthier because I'm not under all this pressure. And I don't know that I really want to step back into that just yet, but I'm really restless in this ministry position that I'm in. And so what do I do? And it was at that moment that Traders Point called me, just like out of the blue. And they'd got my name from somebody. They were searching. The guy who served here before me was here for nearly 25 years, had done an amazing job. I knew Traders Point. I knew of Traders Point. I'd never been here. I knew it was a flagship church in a city that had a lot of flagship churches. Mm-hmm. And I was 31 years old at the time. And I was like, there's no way I can move my family again. I don't know that I'm ready to step back into the high pressure. Traders Point was a church of about 1,500 at the time. I thought, that's way bigger than I've ever led in. I don't think I'm ready. And so I told him no for about 2 months. And I'll never forget a mentor of mine. I called him to talk to him about it. And he said, why are you telling them no? And I told him all the reasons. And I thought he would say, man, that's really wise. But instead he goes, you know, it seems to me like you're giving them an emotional no that's well-founded, but I think you need to give them an informed no. And I was like, what's an informed no? And he goes, well, go talk to them, go interview with them, go up and see it. And if God will confirm it, like he'll either confirm that the answer should be no, or he'll confirm that actually you need to listen to him and maybe the answer is yes. And that was really profound for me. And so we came up, and man, my heart got stirred when I had lunch with the elders and just the vision that they cast. And Lindsay was not on board initially. And she was like, why are you interested in this? Like, I remember literally coming to a service here. We had just moved into this building, so the church wasn't like quite fully ready. I mean, this was a much bigger building than what they had previously been in.
Well, and at that time, it was out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it was there was nothing around. It was like eight miles north of its previous location in a
cornfield.
Yeah.
Cornfields. And the church actually shrunk. Like when they moved into the building, it shrunk because people didn't want to make the move with it, or they thought this is too big, or they knew that the previous pastor was going to retire, so they didn't know what was going to happen. And so I remember coming up to the service, and the church didn't have enough money to do cameras. The church, like, there was no lights; it was just house lights on. And I remember Lindsay just looked at me, and she's like, "What do you see in this?" And I was like, "I don't see it for what it is; I see it for what it can be." And so she really came to this place where she was like, I feel called to it as well. And as soon as we moved here, every place that we'd ever been, maybe you guys can relate to this, we knew that God had called us there, but not to stay there. When we got here, we knew God had called us here, and we knew God had called us to stay here. Mm. And that was just like a, a huge weight off. Like I was like, I was 31 and I said, Lindsay, I think I can give a 35 year run here. Mm. And we've just been building off that. So
that's so cool.
I remember, if I remember right, did you guys buy a house immediately when you got here and like half of it was missing?
Like the the countertops were gone or something, right?
Yeah, we bought a bank owned home, so it had gone into foreclosure. Yeah. And the lady, it was a single lady that was in it, and she couldn't afford the payments, and so they bank foreclosed on her. Mm. So somebody from our church lived in that neighborhood. This is before we moved here, and they called the church and said, "Hey, we know of a lady in our neighborhood. She's got to move out of this house. You know that she's getting kicked out. Can you help her move?" So a team from like some small groups from Traders Point went to her house to help her move. And she was like asking them to take out the kitchen island. She was asking them to take out all the lighting fixtures, like stuff that they knew they shouldn't be taking out, but they did it, you know, and So they took it to a storage facility and put it in the storage facility. So when we moved here, we bought that house having no idea that any of that had happened. So the same small groups are helping us move in. And we're saying, hey, there's a bunch of stuff that's missing here. And they're like, we know where your stuff is.
That's hilarious. Well, for unless you're in ministry or you've been in ministry, vocational ministry, it's hard to conceptualize. You know, I worked for a recruiting firm for 4 years, brought in $1 million of revenue to that organization, was one of the highest producers. When I resigned, there was a security guard that met me at my desk and escorted me out. Like there was no spiritual connection. There was no emotional connection. When you're in ministry, every aspect of your life is filtered through your specific vocation. How has that been good for your family? How's it been challenging for your family over the years to kind of process that and work that out to where not everyone's identity is formed around what you do, but really around Christ? I'm sure that's been a balancing act that you and Lindsay have had to kind of walk over the years.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of couples that, ministry couples that are just wired very differently. You know, I think that, a lot of the pastors, gatherings that we get invited into and the wives that'll be there, it's really fascinating just how different each of those couples and how each of those individuals are. So it's like, you know, we know several pastor couples that feel equally called to that ministry together. And you know, Lindsay, although she loves the church, loves Jesus, she's one of the wisest, most discerning people that I know. She's the gift of faith, but she doesn't feel called to the ministry like I do. She has no desire to be on the platform. She has no desire for people to know who she is and to recognize her. And you guys know Lindsay. I mean, she's got this gift where everybody respects her and loves her. She honestly has no idea why. Like it's so innocent. You know, there's nothing presumptuous about that woman. And so when people like run up to her in the store or they run up to her in the lobby and you know, talk about how much they love her and respect her, she's genuinely confused as to why. Because she's like, I'm not up front. I don't do this. You know, I'm married to a pastor. And so I think that's something that we've had to reconcile because I think in many ways, she's a very private person. I think that, and two out of my four kids are that way. Two of my kids like being my children in the sense that, oh, that's Pastor Aaron's kids. If they can leverage it for their, I won't tell you which two, but you know them well, you probably know. But they can, if they can leverage it, you know, for their own, you know, benefit, then they'll kind of do that. The other two, though, you know, not super excited fans of it, you know, and a lot of it is like the things that people might say to them or assume, presume upon them. So I think that, you know, number one, I think it's really God's gift to me in the sense, you guys know this, like in ministry or in any sort of like setting where you've got lots of eyeballs on you, there are things that people say to you and think about you that are not true and to the extreme, either good or bad. So there are times when people come up to me and they just think that I'm so amazing. And I'm like, you know, man, you don't know me well enough to actually come to that opinion. And then others who think that, you know, I'm horrible. And I'm like, same thing. You don't know me well enough to be able to say that. And so to have a family where they love me for who I am, not what I do, And all my girls all the time are saying this to me. We want, we don't want Pastor Aaron. We want Dad in this setting. And so I think, and you know, they'll be the first to call me on it. Like if they see me in a public setting or on the platform and I'm talking or acting in a way that is not consistent with who they see me to be at home, like they'll call me on it. Like they're not impressed with the platform. And so that's something I think we've had to reconcile. I think that it was healing for my daughters specifically whenever I said, hey, listen, I signed up for this. You didn't get an opportunity to, like you sort of got born into it. And I just recognize that. And so I think that that's been really healing for them to hear in our relationship.
That's so good.
There's a lot of profound stuff
in
that.
No matter what your vocation is, your family can find their identity in, you know, a parent's vocation. So I don't think it just applies to ministry. I think some of those principles are really good for anybody.
I just want to say, I think because you mentioned it, Justin and I have been married, how many years have we been married?
28.
And, you know, I grew up south side of Chicago in Joliet, and, you know, I am a rule follower at heart, but, you know, gotten a couple fights, you know, growing up. I've never seen Justin really like wound up about anything.
Oh boy, where can go here?
And speaking of like pastors, excuse me, being like on the platform or in the pit, we were at dinner and some dudes were like just talking some smack about you. And it was just very uncomfortable. And it actually was more uncomfortable, obviously, because you're our friend, but there was a mom and a daughter, probably like a mom in her 60s, daughter in her 30s or whatever, who knew who you were and were highly uncomfortable. And so
they were sitting between us. So we were sitting at a table. This mom and daughter and granddaughter were at the table between us. And then the guys were on the other side and they were talking loud enough that I could hear it. And I'm an Enneagram 8, but I don't like confrontation.
No,
I'll engage in it, but it's not like conflict for me. Growing up, felt like if you're having conflict, you're failing. So I avoid conflict, but I like to challenge. And so I was just at war with myself because these guys just kept talking and bourbon kept flowing. And
Justin's head is like a tomato. Like he's getting really upset. And then he's done something in all of my year. I mean, we've been together 30 years. I've never seen. He gets up and confronts them in kind of a kind way. It gets a little bit heated and to the point that the manager comes over and says, is everything okay? I'm like, I'm actually totally enamored with my husband right now. So we're good. And so we get in the car and I was like, I'm so proud of you. That was incredible.
She like FaceTimed the boys. She's like, after 28 years, your dad finally confronted someone in public. And it only took him talking trash about you for me to do it.
But this is why I wanted to tell it, not just to tell a funny story on Justin, but something extraordinary happened out of that, that I think the theme that you have hit on throughout our whole conversation is a willingness to be open, a willingness to be transparent, and a willingness to say, I don't know. I don't know if this is a good idea, but it feels like the next best idea. And so Justin tells you what happens more out of like poking fun at both of you. And then, you know, one of these gentlemen come up to you and share like, hey, that was me. And then you give them an invitation to say, hey, man, I'd love to hear kind of what got you to that place. I don't want to skip over that because that takes tremendous amount of humility that can only happen when we process our pain along the way. How have you kept your heart from taking on a story like that and, you know, really being like, well, forget all you guys. I'm just so over this, you know, kind of getting to that, making them pull you from the platform into the pit that you either start serving out of going, well, to be a good leader, I have to make sure everybody knows I'm in the pit. Or to be a great leader, I need to make sure everybody knows that I am at a platform level. How have you found yourself in a healthy, like, middle?
Man, that's a great question. And I'm trying to think how I want to go about answering it. First of all, let me just say, I do remember that story and I felt so loved that Justin would almost get into a fist fight in public for me. That just warms my heart so much. I think that by nature, I am I'm an Enneagram 3, which pretty much, my wife reminds me all the time, nobody really likes hearing descriptions of their number, and I would be in the same category. Every time I hear a description of the Enneagram 3, I just think, man, they're such frauds, like they're so shallow, you know, and because it's this whole idea about performance and your reputation, what people think of you. But in a healthy space, that can be leveraged for a lot of good. I'm by nature like a defender and an explainer. And so I think that's part of like even, you know, my preaching ministry, I exercise those gifts in that. I'm trying to defend the gospel. I'm trying to explain. So when I hear, you know, maybe somebody malign something that I did or misunderstand what I did, my automatic reaction is to like muscle up and defend and explain it. But I think that I've been like through enough experiences, specifically with people that have maybe misunderstood something that I said or did, or maybe they didn't, you know, maybe they were right on. And I just needed, I think I've tried to like learn that when I hear something, some sort of criticism about me, to sit down on the inside and go, okay, I need to sit on my hands. I don't need to punch back. I don't need to defend or explain. Let me just listen fully and process it. And so out of this, first of all, like, is there any truth in what they're saying at all? And I want to listen to that and I want to receive it. You know, some of this has come through counseling. Our team has done a lot of work with, you know, like at an executive level. It's what we call like the iceberg, like what's underneath the surface, what's going on. And so, you know, so much of struggles and problems in any organization, and church would be no different, isn't that we don't have tactics and strategies and know what to do. Like that's honestly like the easier part. It's the emotional stuff on the inside that we're not dealing with. And it spills out sideways onto the people that we work with and the people that we work for. And so really making sure that you're unearthing a lot of that stuff and your heart motivations and what's happening on the inside. And so is there any truth to what they're saying that I can learn from? The other thing is to recognize, once again, when Justin told me about the conversation, I didn't even know who these guys were. And I just thought, they don't know me well enough to make those statements. They're totally misunderstanding. So this means, and the reason why they're so passionate about it, aside from maybe the bourbon, is that they there's something that they're not dealing with. That it actually has very little to do with me. That it's something, and they're actually using me. And by the way, I think in the Western world, we do this with leaders of anything, political leaders, pastors, CEOs, sports figures. We can villainize anybody. And what we're doing is we're regulating ourselves, that by talking trash about somebody that we're not in a relationship with, we feel better about ourselves. So I'm just going, okay, well, there's probably something broken there. So I actually used that in an illustration a couple of weeks later, where very vaguely, I just said, hey, a friend of mine confronted some people because they were saying something. And I don't even know how I used it. And that's when one of the guys came up to me in the lobby and he just said, hey, I just need to confess to you. I'm one of those guys. And I just said, can I give you my cell phone number and text me? Because I'd love to have coffee with you and I want to hear you out. And I'd encourage you to go back to those other two guys, whoever they are, and give them the same invitation, because I feel like there's something we can learn from each other. And I think that's just healthier all the way around. And I did have coffee with him and we talked for about an hour. And actually he didn't want to talk about any of the things they were talking trash about, because it actually didn't have anything to do with those things. It was everything else. So,
that's extraordinary.
I think that's an example of how over the last 16 years, you know, places of worship don't become authentic because it's on a vision statement or it's a core value. Places of worship become authentic because people in that community of faith demonstrate authenticity. And it was, you know, it was a kind of a expression of authenticity that this guy, he could have been unnamed forever, right? He didn't have, he could have walked past you for the next 10 years and you would have never known he was one of those guys. But just the humility and the transparency he offered in that moment, and vulnerability to say that was me, that's huge. I want to go back to something that you mentioned when you were talking about your time in California. And you said, I got to tap out here for a second, or I'm going to do something. you know, a lot of poor decisions are made in times of fatigue or crisis or depletion. Coming through COVID and coming through, you know, the challenge of going from a church of 1,500 to 15,000, I'm sure there's been other seasons of depletion or seasons of feeling like, yeah, I need to tap out here. How have you balanced kind of your own capacity? Because as an Enneagram 3, you probably have high capacity, but also just the need to stay healthy mentally, emotionally, spiritually.
Yeah, well, I mean, COVID would have been another one of those like crisis moments. I mean, I seriously flirted with quitting, which probably, you know, most other pastors or anybody leading anything during that time probably did. But I can pinpoint it. I mean, it's like, you know, June of 2020 was the worst month of my life. The second week of June was the worst week of my life. The Tuesday of that week was the worst day of my life. And it was so much pressure that I had panic attacks for the first time that I can ever recall having in life. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, or certainly what got me through that time was my wife. Lindsay fared through COVID. It's kind of interesting. We had just moved into a house a couple of years before that where she borderline kind of had like a little bit of a breakdown. Everything was just so overwhelming to her when we were moving into the house, because we moved into the house and it wasn't fully done yet. So we had contractors in, like when she's trying to unpack, and it was just too much for her. And I thrived because it was production. Like it was everything, every day something new was happening. So I was thriving. In COVID, everything flipped. So she was so steady, like a rock all through COVID. Like I never saw her break down once during that season. I broke down almost every day. And so she, you know, really kind of gave me strength through a lot of that. My elders were amazing during that time. They would just come and sit with me on the front porch and cry with me and pray with me and hold my hands up when I didn't know that I had much left in me, you know, counseling, therapy, you know, pastors groups, all that stuff to try to get me through. I would say now, like even in what I would even call like right now, you know, coming out of COVID and where we're at currently, like I'm having so much fun. Like this is such a sweet time in ministry. It's amazing. I'm so grateful. And I think for me trying to, what is that statement that the Navy SEALs have? They're like, slow is fast and fast is smooth or something. I'm totally butchering.
Yeah.
But it's that idea of like slowing down to go faster and smoother.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've talked to a couple other leaders. I'm 47 now. I've talked to a couple other leaders kind of in my age range. And we all agree, like, you know, my RPMs, so to speak, in my 20s and 30s were redlined. Like I got something to prove. I got something to do. You know, I've got to prove that I'm worthy of this. So I'm redlining my RPMs, but I'm getting half the results. And now it feels like my RPMs are way lower, but I'm getting twice the results. And it's just, I've tried to slow way down, try to be open-handed about that and just make sure that I'm not just, I mean, it goes back to Jesus' statement of the vine and the branches. I'm not trying to produce so that I can feel connected to God. I need to get connected to God so that I can produce, that he will produce through me. And that requires just slowing down. And so I don't have to make all the decisions around here. In fact, you'd probably be shocked at how many decisions I don't make around here, that I'm just constantly passing that off to the team. I find it a really healthy practice and this requires a lot of wisdom and discernment, that even if there's a set of decisions that I actually think are the best to make, learning to be disciplined to go, you know what? Hey guys, you make that call. Because that takes the onus off of me. That prevents me from feeling like I'm more important than I should be. Let me just share the load here with the rest of the team, because this shouldn't be like all on one leader. Because if it's all on one leader, their knees are going to buckle and that's when they're going to do something stupid. And so let me just kind of spread this out and share it with the team and go slow.
As we kind of close our time together, I just hearing you talk really throughout this whole conversation gives me that Exodus 17 picture of Moses holding up his arms to ask God to help them, you know, win this intense battle. And that verse, you know, in Exodus 17 talks about how that Aaron and Hur, they come up and they provide a stone for Moses to sit. And then they hold up his hands. there, you can read that and be like, cool, 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 right? You know, but like, there is a battle going on and you're looking for a rock for the leader to sit down on, and your contribution is holding up an arm while everybody else is on the battlefield. It can really like trip you up. But I feel like that's the picture of slow to go fast. And there are so many leaders out there listening to this podcast. They, maybe they're not in ministry. Maybe they are. They're feeling that sifting. We hear over and over again, Aaron, this statement: I just wish I had a mentor. I wish I had someone who was looking to give me a rock or to come hold up my hand while the battle's raging. Do you have like any encouragement for someone, like a path to begin trying to find a mentor? Or have we placed too much on one person, and really mentorship looks, you know, like branches of different people from the vine that give us that mentoring experience?
Yeah. Well, they're out there. I mean, I know that people, and I think maybe we need to manage our expectations or give a certain definition of what a mentor is. You know, a mentor isn't Yoda. You know, a mentor isn't like the Oracle from, you know, from the Matrix. And I think a lot of people don't see themselves as mentors because they recognize all the stuff that, you know, they still need to get right. But everybody can be a mentor in the sense of really what a lot of mentoring is just encouragement, be a sounding board. I often will say this to pastors that, you know, I'm spending time with. It's like, hey, man, reach out to me anytime. I don't know that I have all the answers or any answers, but man, I'm certainly willing to sit with you in it. And that's really what a mentor is. It's just like sitting with the person in it and being available and even to share like what God has taught you through your own experience. I think if you're looking for a mentor and you're like, man, where are they? I think a lot of times you need to ask. And there'd be a lot of people that'd be willing to mentor if you would just simply ask them and put some parameters around it. Say, hey, would you be willing to meet with me in a mentoring relationship for the next 6 months? And here's what that means. This is how often we'd meet. This is how long we'll meet. I'll send you a set of questions ahead of time to kind of some things that I'm kind of chewing on and thinking about, and then we can evaluate it after that. Because, you know, if you just walk up to somebody and say, will you be my mentor for the rest of my life? Can I just suck you dry every moment of every day? You know, I think we just got to define some parameters around what that looks like. And I think a lot of people would say, man, absolutely, yes. Like, I'd love to do that.
That's great. That's
okay.
Great.
Last question for you, because I feel like you've hit on this kind of naturally, but how important do you feel like counseling, therapy, seeking outside help from a professional could be for somebody who may be struggling with feeling defeated or feeling run down or feeling like they are on the verge of making some bad decisions relationally or maritally? How important has that been in your life?
Critical. And I think that, you know, good counseling is kind of like, you know, car maintenance. I think a lot of times people wait until the engine blows and then they go into the mechanic and say, can you fix that? And they do, we do the same thing with counselors. You know, pastors even get this a lot. You know, the couple comes in and their marriage is blown to smithereens, and that's when they come in for counseling. I do think that it's getting better in the sense that there's not as much of a stigma around counseling as what there used to be, which is good. I think more and more people are open to it. But I would look at this as, you know, like it's preventative care, not necessary. Now, there can be crisis counseling when you are in a crisis and that gets elevated. But I even think, like, don't wait for a crisis to get counseling, because I think that all of us have some things that we need to unpack. All of us come out of a meeting and go, man, I don't know why I reacted that way. I need to get real curious about that. And I need to have somebody help me unpack the luggage to sort through some stuff that can be objective. And it can ask me the tough questions and hold me accountable to that. So, you know, I don't know that it needs to be like 365 days out of the year. There may be definitely different seasons for it. But I think that it's absolutely critical to keep our hearts in a healthy place, because we, out of everybody that we can deceive ourselves the best. And a good counselor will call that out.
That's so good. Good stuff. Well, let's pray.
That's,
no. that,
that's why I've been trying to talk him into writing a book for the last 2 years. So.
Yeah. Well, we We appreciate you. We're so grateful for you and Lindsay, and just this, I think you have breathed some maybe fresh encouragement that I think a lot of people need in the most profound and most simplest of ways. And so we're grateful for who you are, and thankful for the hard work that you have done to change the community that we live in. And we are excited, well-deserved, in this next season of just joy and excitement. So we pray that over your family and your church family. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And grateful for your guys' ministry and friendship as well.
Man, such good stuff with Aaron. So grateful for his wisdom, his vulnerability, and just his willingness to pour into us on this episode of the Let's Get Real podcast. Make sure you check out the show notes. You can follow him on Instagram. You can check out Traders Point Christian Church, and they have an unbelievable ministry in the Indianapolis area. And so if you're looking for a church home and you live in the Indy area, can't encourage you enough to check out Traders Point. So we're grateful for Aaron and just his investment in us on this episode. Well, one final invite to you before we sign off to join us for the Refine Us Weekend Experience May 3rd through the 5th in Nashville. If your marriage is struggling, if you're looking for ways to reconnect, maybe you feel burnt out in your marriage relationship, this weekend is for you. So go to refineus.org/weekend, or you can check out the show notes and click a link there. Find out all the information, register, and join us May 3rd through the 5th in Nashville. Well, until next time, we'll talk to you soon.